COVID, we learned from 6 to 6:45 every morning. So now everybody learns from Sabrusa on their own, still in the morning, about 30 guys. But we get about 10 to 15 people on Friday morning for the shir. Rabbi Lentz gives a Mishnah Berurah shir Monday through Thursday, 6:35. So we used to have a shmooze on Friday. So when COVID started, Rabbi Lentz and I thought it would be a good idea to invite people from places that we wouldn't normally hear. And it's been a boon in the Zoom world to be able to tap into people we wouldn't be able to hear regularly. So I'll give you a spiel on our morning kolach.
Okay, are we ready to start?
Think so.
Yeah? Okay, so I wanted to discuss, I don't remember what I discussed last time that we had the opportunity to learn together. I assume it was a halachic shaila of some sort, and going through the answer, does anyone remember? I don't remember what it was.
And so the format is usually we go until about 7:05 or 10:05 your time with halacha, and then the last 10 minutes.
Right, with parsha. Okay. Yeah, so I don't remember the topic that I discussed last time, but I wanted to share with you a shaila that I definitely did not discuss last time, because this shaila was just asked to me this 2 weeks ago. So I think it's been more than 2 weeks since we've met. So I'm going to share with you two shailas, actually, and then we'll try to develop an approach to answering these shailas. Shaila number one that I got is as follows. It says, someone texted me, someone who's a Rebbe in a yeshiva, and he wrote, a Talmud of mine asked me the following question. He's been gambling on an app lately, and he discovered a glitch in one of the sports. He's able to look up who wins the game on his browser and then go back and bid on the app for a guaranteed win. And he wanted to know whether it's mutter to do so. Meaning, essentially, what he discovered is that obviously not in every sport, otherwise the app would obviously be out of business very quickly, but on one of the more obscure sports, I don't know, whatever sport people don't typically bet that much on, he discovered that he's able to still bet on the game after the conclusion of the game, after the game is over. And he's able to make a lot of money that way. So he wanted to know if he's allowed to do that, and does it make a difference whether he's bidding against a Nachri or a Yisrael. So it's so fascinating to me that he starts with the assumption that you're allowed to go on gambling apps and bet, and he's just working with that assumption. His only question is, am I also allowed to steal, in addition to gambling, which is a stunning assumption. But anyway, that was one question that was asked to me. I thought it would be a good jumping off point to discuss some of the issues that come up all the time relating to Ta'usakum and Gnevasakum, and maybe a little bit about gambling, but another shaila also that relates somewhat to this. I get a lot of shailas, especially this time of year, leading into Hanukkah, about Amazon questions. See, Amazon is very, very busy this time of year, and they're an imperfect company. They're a very profitable company, but they're an imperfect company, meaning there will a lot of times you'll be sent two of something you only ordered one of. They'll accept a return and then send it back to you anyway, even though you didn't pay for it. There are a lot of mistakes that happen with Amazon, and some people are aware of that there are a lot of mistakes that happen with Amazon, and they start taking advantage of some of those mistakes, and sometimes even creating those mistakes, because they know that it's such a massive company that they'll always be mochel when something small happens. So I got the following disturbing shaila from somebody. It reads as follows. Shalom Rebbe, I wanted to ask Rebbe a question. I've been dating for over 2 years, and now I've been looking back to see if maybe there's something I need to do tshuva on. Meaning the person realizes that shidduchim is not going as easily as he would have liked, even though he knows that sometimes it takes a little bit of time. So he's thinking maybe he did something wrong. Maybe there's an avera in his past that requires tikkun in order for him to have the zechus to meet his future wife. So he started doing the cheshbon hanefesh, which is always a nice thing to do. It's something that's very praiseworthy to think about what we've done wrong in our lives and try to be mesakein. But here's what he came up with. 2 years ago, I purchased a watch, a pair of slippers, and boots from Amazon. Three products, right? A watch, a pair of slippers, and boots. And each one he had an issue with. Number one, he says, I already owned the same exact watch, but the battery was dead, and I returned the watch with the dead battery to the Amazon seller to save me the trip to fix the battery. So what this fellow decided to do, instead of going to his local store to get the battery replaced, easier for him to go to his computer, order the same exact watch, have it delivered, and send back the watch with the broken battery and let them deal with the battery. And that way it cost him nothing to replace the battery, and he didn't even have to leave his house. So that is one thing he did. That's one highly unethical thing that he did. A second highly unethical thing that he did is for the slippers. You know, I was talking to my wife, by the way. When I got married 22 years ago, 22 years ago, my in-laws were generous enough to buy me a very beautiful watch. That was the practice. I don't know if it still is the practice to buy like a chassan's watch. So they bought me a very beautiful watch. When we moved 16 years ago from Cedarhurst to North Woodmere, I packed the watch and I hid it somewhere very, very well to make sure that it was going to be safe. I hid it so well that I haven't seen it in 16 years. I couldn't find it when I looked for it. I was concerned maybe I left it behind in the move. So my wife was cleaning out my closet recently, and way in the back under things she found this very fancy watch. But the battery's dead. It's been 16 years. The battery's dead. So I told her, now I have an Eitzah. I don't even have to leave the house. I could just order the same watch. That's a terrible idea. You can't do that. Obviously, it's also to do. This guy realizes this is an Avera. A second thing he said, for the slippers, I purchased the same pair from eBay, but open box. And I sent the eBay pair back to Amazon and kept the Amazon version. So again, he, with the pair of slippers, he got a closed box from Amazon, bought an open box from eBay, sent back the open box to Amazon as his return. And for the boots, a third thing that he did, I owned a knockoff pair and I sent that back to Amazon and I kept the one I bought from Amazon, which was the real designer. So he bought a fancy pair of designer boots. He sent back as a return the knockoff pair and he got a full refund for sending back the knockoff pair. So a few months after I did this, he writes, and I don't even know why I did it. It was stupid and I feel awful. I sent Amazon an email apologizing and offering to correct what I did. The watch seller said it wasn't a big deal. They fixed the battery easily and they were mochel. For the slippers and the boots, Amazon told me they realized what I did, but they still refunded me and said they were impressed I told them and said I can keep them. So I let it go because they were mochel. But I'm asking Rebbe right now, from a halachic standpoint, should I be concerned that maybe this is why I'm not finding my shidduch? Is there anything else that I need to do in order to do proper tshuva? Did I miss something in the tshuva process for these unethical behaviors in terms of taking advantage of the Amazon in this way? So I thought both of these shidduchs were somewhat distressing, meaning that people you have to think in terms of a shidduch, let's say. Is it because of the Avera that's on his record that he's not finding the Shidduch? Probably not, but maybe there's a serious cheshbon nefesh as to what would lead you to such behavior in the first place. Meaning we're talking about a single person, so unlikely that he has serious financial pressures in his life. A person, as life goes on, you get much more serious financial pressures, and if he's willing to cave that easily when the pressure's not on, can you imagine how he's going to deal when the pressure is on? It's going to be l'chora much, much more difficult to deal with. So maybe that's something to cheshbon before you enter into the most trusting relationship you're going to enter into in your life, as to whether you're the most trustworthy person and whether one has worked on something like that. But both of these shailas deal with the idea that sometimes we use our Gemara cup and we use it for the in the wrong way. We use it to find a shtick, find a shortcut. So it really raises the questions involved in Gezel Akum and Ta'us Akum. And there are many, many more shailas that I get each and every year, way more often than each and every year, about Gezel Akum and Ta'us Akum. So I wanted to take a few moments to discuss some of these issues. The issue to steal from a non-Jew is based on a Gemara in Maseches Baba Kama on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. The Gemara tells us that a Yisrael v'Kanani Anas Shabo'u L'din, if you have a Yisrael and a non-Jew that face a din with each other, and the non-Jew is an Anas, he's someone who who's a strong person who's able to force the Jew into whatever arrangement. So if you're facing a din Torah, imato yachol zakeu bedina Yisrael zakeu. If you're a Beis Din and you see that the Jew can, based on the dinim of the Torah, the Jew would be victorious. You can judge based on the dinay Torah. V'omerlo, and you tell the nachri, kach dinenu. This is our din. Bedine Kananim, if you see that the Jew will be victorious using Dine Kananim, using the secular law, Zakeu Vamalo Kachtin Chem. So you can rule in favor of the Jew and say, look, we're working with secular law right now. The Imlav, but he's not going to be able to win in either Jewish law or in secular law, but you know that the guy has done things that were inappropriate to force the Jew into this deal. So Bayin Alav Ba Akifin. Then you can come up with all sorts of chachma in order to and trickery in order to make things come out the way that they should. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. That's Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Ein bayin alav ba'akifin mipnei kiddush Hashem. That you're not allowed to do and resort to any sort of trickery because of kiddush Hashem, and the Jew should just pay the guy whatever money he's being asked to pay because of the notion of kiddush Hashem. So the Gemara asks that according to Rabbi Akiva, apparently it's only usher to steal because of kiddush Hashem and chilul Hashem. Sounds like when there's no issue of chilul Hashem, it sounds like it would be mutter. Says Gemara, is that true? For Rabbi Akiva, taima di'iko kiddush Hashem, haleko kiddush Hashem. If there was no Kiddush Hashem issue, you'd be allowed to resort to trickery and steal from a guy. Is that possible? The Gezel Kanani Mishari, the Gemara says, is a mutter to steal from a non-Jew. Vatanya, Am Rabbi Shimon Darvizah Darish Rabbi Akiva, Kshaba Mizafirin, Minayin LeGezel Kanani Shu Aser. The very same Rabbi Akiva said, how do I know Gezel Kanani is Aser? And he quotes a pasuk. Tamal Omar, Achrei Nimkar Gu'la Tialo, Shalim Shechenu V'yetze, that Bezin's not allowed to steal an Eved from a guy. They have to pay the guy in order to redeem the Eved from the guy. It sounds like Gezel a guy is always Aser. So, Ela Amarav Lo Kasha, Habig Zelo, Habavkas Halva'as. So, very critical chiluk the Gemara makes. The Gemara says, to steal from a guy, there's no doubt that that's Aser. Gezel Mamish absolutely is Aser. But hafkaas halva'aso, if when it comes to not paying back that which is a loan, which we're going to have to go through the rules as far as that's concerned, that's a chilul Hashem issue rather than a gezel issue. So we'll have to see what the gedarim of that is. But the Gemara also distinguishes between what's called gezel agoy and ta'us akum. Ta'us akum is mutter. If a non-Jew makes a mistake in terms of a business dealing, and you notice the mistake, you are not obligated to inform him of that mistake, strictly speaking. The Nesivos in Choshen Mishpatzim and Kuf Tzadi Dalet explains that Hafka'as Halva'a means money that the Jew received beheter. For example, a non-Jew loaned him money, or a pikadon, gave him a pikadon to watch, and then never asked for it back, forgot to ask for it back. You don't have to bring it up if the person who owns it doesn't ask for it. That's all it means, Hafka'as Halva'a. But to steal, absolutely stealing is aser. So the question is, what level Isser is this? Is this an Isser Daraisa or is this an Isser Darabanan? The Beis Shmuel in Ebenezer, Simon Chavches, Siv Karnei, quotes Machlokes about this. That Rashi in Masechet Sanhedrin writes in Daphne and Zayin that the Isser of Gezela from a non-Jew is midrabanan because of chilul Hashem and b'dievedim gazel lo machzir. However, the Rambam in Hilchos Gezeila v'Aveda and in Hilchos Geneva, Perek Aleph of each, the Rambam writes that there's an Isser Torah to be gozel migoy, and because it's an Isser Daraisa, there is a requirement to be chozer, to be machzir the Gezeila to a guy as well. Shulchan Aruch in Simen Shin Mem Ches and Choshe Mishpat and Simen Shin Nun Tes and Choshe Mishpat, Pas like the Rambam. And in fact, the Radvaz in Achuva and Chelik Dalet Sim Reshe writes Linyan Adin Hadavar Barur Degnevas Hanachrim Asura Minatora. It's an Issa D'Oraisa, and that's what the Alter Rebbe in the Shulchan Aruch Harav in Ilchus Gzeilu Gneva Sif Aleph Paskins as well. An Issa D'Oraisa to be Gozel Minachri. The Minchas Chinuch distinguishes between Gneva and Gzeila. He says it it could be that everyone would agree that geneva is asur min haTorah because it's so severe. The Torah is so machmir about a geneva. You're not even allowed to be lemekat of legenova al menas l'shalim. You're not even allowed to. Let's say you see someone is poor and can use some money, but he won't accept tzedakah from you. So you come up with a trick. You'll be goneh from him, then you'll have to pay kefil. So that way you'll be able to give him tzedakah because you'll end up paying double what you stole from him. You're not even allowed to do that when it comes to geneva. Geneva is very, very serious, and therefore geneva from a goy, says the Minchas Chinuch and Mitzvah Reish Chav Dalid, is also min haTorah, but gezela from a goy, that's Machlokas Rambam Rashi. So Minchas Chinuch even makes it more severe, meaning we had this Machlokas Rambam Rashi, is stealing from an achri asur midarais or midrabanan. Everyone agrees it's asur. Is asur midarais or asur midrabanan? So the Rambam said darais, but Rashi said it's only drabanan. Comes along Minchas Chinuch, he says, no, it's only asur midrabanan if it's gezela, but geneva is going to be asur min haTorah even according to Rashi. And aside from that, even regardless of what you hold about Raisa Rabbanan, the Talmud Be'eliyahu Rabba Parsha Chavav writes that certainly someone who engages in this kind of behavior is ultimately going to steal from Jews as well. It never stops at stealing from a Nachri. Lo Nitna Torah Al Manas Kein El Kedei Lekadesh Shemo HaGadol. The Torah was given to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, and one should always be driven by that principle of wanting to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, and one who engages in this kind of behavior is most certainly not being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. In fact, the Ben Ish Chai in Parshas Kitzeitzei, Shana Rishona Halacha Zayin, writes that it's also to be Gonei Vogozel Kol Shu Din Torah Bein Mi Yisrael Bein Mi Nachri Bein Gadol Bein Katan. And even if the Nachri is Tzieres Yisrael, a lot of times people justify, they think, I deserve it, because if you knew the Agmas Nefesh that my boss caused me, or that my company is giving me, so I deserve that I should be able to take payment for that. We don't get to make those decisions. Even if he was Mitzair you, we don't have the right to do that. And then the Ben Ish Chai writes, the Gezel HaGoy Kasha B'Yoser. And he says, Gezel HaGoy is even more severe. More severe. Why would it be more severe? Chada Devadei Lo Yimchel. First of all, he's not going to be Mochel. And he says there's something very deep that goes on up in Shemayim. If the Sar of the Akum gets the Shlita over the Sar of the Yisrael, it could be something over Kedushas Yisrael and gains access to the Kedusha that Klal Yisrael normally has. So there's something that very deeply up in Shemayim is going to be impacted very negatively by Gezel. Now, in these cases, it wasn't outright gezel, but it was at least causing the person to make a mistake. Meaning, this is somewhere in between. This isn't gezel. All these cases that we described, I returned the boots, but there are different boots that I returned. Did I steal? I didn't take anything forcefully against anybody's will. And the guy who, let's say it's a Nachri, assuming the seller is a Nachri, which, by the way, is not a chazaka at all with Amazon. There's not like, I think the biggest Amazon sellers are in Muncie and Lakewood and Borough Park. The biggest Amazon sellers are kollel wives, I think. That's people always ask, how's that system going to survive? That everyone learns in kollel. That's how. The wives are all selling on Amazon. They found the business. But even assuming that it's a Nachri, the Nachri didn't steal from him, I didn't take from him forcefully, but it's also not that he happened to have made a mistake. If he happened to have made a mistake, you don't have to tell him, although we do recommend, if you're able to make a Kiddush Hashem, you should tell him even if he happened to have made a mistake. A friend of mine told me he was once shopping for suits in Sims. They used to have a Sims bash every year, and if you wanted to see all your old friends from yeshiva from 20 years ago, you'd go to the Sims bash, because that's where all the Jews went. So they had like unbelievably good prices on suits. So a friend of mine told me he was shopping there, and when he was checking out, he noticed that the cashier made a mistake in terms of the bill. And he said to the cashier, I'm sorry, I think you made a mistake. I think I owe you another $50. And the cashier said, it's okay, don't worry about it. So he said, I'm sorry, I'm not sure that you're authorized to do that. I would rather pay. I would rather, pay the extra money. And he said the cashier took his hand, put it, it's a little bit of a weird thing to do. He put it on my friend's yarmulke, like that, and then he kissed his hand. you know, as if to say, you know, that the integrity of a God-fearing person is something that he found inspiring. If a person has an opportunity to do something like that, you know, that's a unique opportunity. But what about it? But Mikra, then you're not required to, even though Sims is a Jew, so probably you are required to. But if it was a non-Jew, but what about if it's not that the guy made a mistake, you caused the guy to make a mistake, you sent back a pair of shoes that you know is not the right pair of shoes. You sent back something that you know. You're the one that caused him. You were mat at him. So this is based on another Gemara in Baba Kama Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, what the halacha is over here. The Gemara tells us a story that Amar Shmuel ta'uso muteres. If the guy makes a mistake on his own, that's mutter. Ki yad Shmuel zavin mekuti likna d'dava b'mar d'parzala. A non-Jew sold something to Shmuel thinking that it was nechoshes, that it was made out of copper, but really it was gold. So kana b'dalad zuzi v'ivel lechad zuza. The Gemara is a little bit cryptic, but the way Rashi understands the Gemara is that Shmuel paid with the guy one extra coin. The guy was asking for 4 dinar and he paid 5 dinar. Why did he do that? Because he figured if I pay a little extra, he's going to just try to get away as quickly as possible. He's going to think, oh, I got a little extra money, and he's not going to look carefully at what he just gave me. So the non-Jew had made the mistake. He thought he was selling copper. It was really gold. But Shmuel knew that if he were to pay the right amount, the non-Jew will pick up, may look very closely at what he was selling and say, wait, I think I gave you the wrong thing and I made a mistake. So in order to rush through the transaction, Shmuel paid him extra. So the non-Jew is going to think, oh, this Jew just gave me extra money. He gave me more money than I'm charging, so let me quickly get out of here so that he won't notice. So that's the psychology game Shmuel was playing. Meaning, once the non-Jew made the mistake, Shmuel was willing to take advantage of that mistake, according to the Gemara. So now, the Gemara talks about Tautlus, but what about being mate? What about causing him to make a mistake? So there are three passages in the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Gzeil Vaveda Perikid Alav Halacha Dal writes, Tautlus goy ka avidos muteres, vuhu she ta'a me atzmo, aval hatoso aser. The Rambam says, if he makes a mistake, that's one thing. For you to cause him to make a mistake, that is aser. The Rambam in Hilchos Geneva, Perek Zayin Halacha Ches, v'chein aser lahatos es hagoy b'cheshbon el yedakti gimo. You're not allowed to cause him to make a mistake. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayis in Maseches Kelim writes that people, that the fact that Hamonei Bnei Adam think, even some special people think, that ha'ta'ayos sheke'elim utarosim hagoyim, that these kinds of misleading things are mutter to do with non-Jews, Eino nachon, v'deya bilti nachona. It's incorrect. V'chien mutarin ha'onos v'atachbulos u'minei amirmos v'aziyuf v'asiluf v'magoyim. You're not allowed to do any sort of trickery. Amru aleim ha'shalom asu ligonov das ha'brios v'afilu das ha'goy. Gemara Chulin Daf Sadi Dalet says, Gnevas das is asur, even das ha'goy. V'kol shkein mi'etoli chil Hashem. And obviously, if there's going to be chil Hashem, then it's navon chamur yoser. And then the Rambam writes, v'yusagu la'adam tchunos ra'us alidei kol ha'mas ha'maram alalu. A person engages in these kinds of behaviors, it's, forget about Bein Adam L'Chaveru. Bein Adam L'Chaveru, generally, most mitzvot Bein Adam L'Chaveru do not apply Bein Yisrael L'Nachri, right? You don't have, Bein Adam L'Chaveru, of Shaftar often points out, is based on the notion of reciprocity. That what you would like to expect others to treat you, you are supposed to treat them, right? So you don't expect your non-Jewish colleague to be Mevaker Chola, let's say, if you're not feeling well. Because he's not your brother, he's your colleague, and therefore you have no chiyuv to be mevaker chola to him or something like that, or to be machnis oreach. But Jews, those are your brothers, and your brothers and sisters, that you do expect a sense of achnas arachim, and therefore you have to reciprocate. And that's why you're not allowed to steal from a non-Jew or do anything else like that, because you would expect in a just society that it's reasonable to expect that they shouldn't do that to you either, right? That there should be a certain sense of reciprocity. But says Ram, leaving aside Bein Adam L'Chaveru, there's another element. Ram doesn't use these words, but the Gra uses similar terminology called Bein Adam L'Atzmo. There are certain behaviors that a person does that are just going to impact who the person is. That when you engage in certain behaviors, it's going to become habitual, and it's going to be, to have a negative impact just on your own neshama, on your own tselem elokim, on your own mahu af ata. I recently gave the example in a shir. And I mentioned that, you know, let's say you're all alone in your car. You're driving all alone in your car, and someone cuts you off in traffic, right? So to scream, to curse and scream at the person, the person doesn't hear you, your windows are closed, no one hears you, you're all alone. So is there a violation of Me'olam Mechavero? No. Is there a violation of Me'olam Mechavero? Doesn't really seem like a violation. What's the real violation? Be'olam Atzmo, that a mensch is in control. And when you lose control, you're losing your own menschlichkeit. That's the issue. I actually saw a friend of mine shortly after I gave that shiur, and he told me that his wife said, get over here, you need to listen to this. you got to stop cursing when you're alone in the car. And he's like, how do you know what I do when I'm alone? She's like, I know what you do. And so he's now working on, he told me his rabbi said that he should say names of tzaddikim when he's alone in the car. So now when someone cuts him off in traffic, he screams out names of tzaddikim. I don't know. So the Rambam highlights that in other atzma element, but the Rambam is very, very clear that it's an iser to be mata as well. Rashi, on the other hand, the Masechta Baba Kama Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, disagrees. Rashi thinks that even to be mata a goy is technically mutter as long as it results in his tos, in his making a mistake. Tosus Baba Kama Kuf Yud Gimel similarly. Tosus writes that if the guy doesn't realize, then it's mutter to be mata him, but if he will realize, then it's aser, because then it's going to be a major chil Hashem. So how do we pass on Shulchan Aruch this machlokas between the Rambam on the one hand and Rashi and Tosfos on the other hand? So the Rambam in Simin Shin Mem Ches if Beis in Chosh Mishpah quotes both deos. He quotes the Shita of Rashi and the Tor as the Stam Deya. The Tor holds like Rashi, and then he quotes the Mordechai, which is the Shita of the Rambam, as a Yesh Omrin. So you would think you would follow the Stam against the Yesh Omrin would be mutter. Nevertheless, all of the Achronim say that it's aser. All of the Achronim, the Marshal in Yamshel Shulman, the seventh parak of Chulin, the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch Harav in Chosh Mishpat Hilchasan Osag Nevis Da Sifir Aleph, the Taz in Yardaya Sim Kuf Chaf, they all seem to assume that it's the Taz uses that to explain a Shita Samachaber in Chosh Mishpat. They all seem to assume that it's us, so that we generally paskin like the Shita of the Rambam. And even if it were mutter, there's ample marmakomos to tell us that we should be extra strict on integrity related issues. For the most famous among them is probably the Beragola. The Beragola writes, "Va'ani kosev zos ledoros." He says, "I am writing something for future generations to know." Shera'isi rabim gadlu ve'shiru min tov she'etu ha'akum v'lo etzlichu. I've seen a lot of people that have become wealthy based on mistakes that goyim have made, and they were not matzliach. V'yordei nechseim letimyon, meaning even tov ha'akum, which is technically mutter. He says, "I've seen people take advantage of it; they end up losing everything." V'lo inichu achareihem bracha. And then he says, and Luumazos, Rabim Asher Kitchu Hashem, Virziru to Uyos Ha'akum Bedover Chashuv. I've seen people that were Makadi Shem Shemayim and returned significant sums of money based on the Tolos Ha'akum. Gadlu Ve'eshiru. They became very wealthy. Vitzlichu, Vinichum Yisrim Lolaleim. They were able to leave a big Yerusha for their children. Meaning, the Ribbono Shalom runs the world. So to think that you can have a shortcut and you're going to be able to take advantage, the Ribbono Shalom runs the world. That's going to be ultimately what's going to determine. The Ribbono Shalom is going to determine ultimately what happens. That's in fact Shulchan Aruch writes in Shin Mem Ches, Bizman Hazeh, Bekol Medinos Elu, Asur Min HaTorah Shum HaTov VaHarama, Vein Shum Chilek Bein Yisrael LeEino Yisrael. That we're not mechalek at all between the Yisrael and Eino Yisrael. We always have to be absolutely honest. So what about this fellow's tshuva? So they were mochel. So I think for that we have to go back to the Beit Adam. So let's take the two shailas. Let's go back to answer the two shailas. The one about the guy with the app, it's at least mata akum. It's probably worse. It's probably straight out kazela. Meaning, certainly the people who are paying out the money don't realize that the game is already over by the time the person is placing his bet. And even if gambling war mutter, which is a whole separate shmuz, but even if gambling war mutter, that would at least be mata akum, which is usser, and it would certainly not be permissible to do. What about the fellow who had to do who already got mechila from all the sellers? So first of all, he may not not have. The mechila may not have been from all the right people. I'm not a great expert in Amazon sales, but someone who sells on Amazon told me that sometimes when they'll get a return, the Amazon shipping will just repackage it and send it out to the next person that orders it. So if you return the knockoff pair of boots when you bought a good pair of boots, and then the next person that orders it gets a knockoff pair of boots, they'll leave a bad review on the seller's on the seller that he did. So you could be causing more harm than you even realize that you're causing. But aside from that, the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro element is probably, as far as Dine Mamonis, is forgiven with a Mechila, but there's also an element of Tshuva that a person has to do, meaning the Rambam writes in Ilchas Tshuva that for Bein Adam L'Chaveiro it's not enough to do Tshuva and Vidu and Yom Kippurim and everything else. But it's also required, meaning you also need mechila on top of that. But you also have to do a cheshbon nefesh internally to have a serious sense of charata for doing something like that. So when a person does a full tshuva, then that's and he's already gotten mechila, I think that's as far as he has to go. So that is the halacha portion of what we will do today. And now let me just share with you a brief Dvar Torah. There's a Rashi that everyone emphasizes the first half of the Rashi and not the second half of the Rashi. I don't have a chumash with me right now, but if I recall, when Yaakov Avinu says im lavan garti, right? So we could finish off the sentence, right? How does Rashi finish with im lavan garti? The tayag mitzvah shamarti, and I observed all the tayag mitzvahs. But then Rashi continues; he doesn't just stop at the tayag mitzvah shamarti. He says v'lo lemadati mima'as of harayim. And I didn't learn from Lavan's evil deeds, right? More than just Tayag Mitzvah Shemarti. I didn't learn from his evil deeds. So the Meir Shapiro, the Lublina Rav, Zichron Levracha, was bothered by Yaakov's apparent flaunting of his ability to withstand the social pressure for evil that was felt in Lavan's household. Aren't we best off leaving our actions to speak for themselves? We have to go and talk about our great successes, that even though I had this great Yetzer Hara, I've been so perfect, I've been so wonderful. Is that the way that a tzaddik talks? That a tzaddik is going to say such things about himself? Let other people say those things about you. You don't have to be the one, or let nobody say them about you. Let the Ribbono Shel Olam know about them. We don't have to be the ones to go tooting our own horns. It's a little bit odd that Yaakov would make such a statement. Furthermore, Yaakov's statement itself is somewhere between ironic and puzzling, meaning to say, and I didn't learn anything from Lavan. It's fascinating because Chazal did learn a lot from Lavan. There are many halachos that we actually derive from Lavan, at least four that I know of, that we derive from Lavan himself. Tosfos, commenting on the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Nun Beis, quotes Shitas Rabbeinu Tam, that if a man says to a father of two daughters, Bitcha Mekudeshesli, without specifying which daughter he's trying to be Mekadesh, you can assume he means the older daughter. Why? Because Lavan said that it's not the derech to give Hatzi'ira Lefnei HaBechira. And we learn from Lavan, LaHalacha, that it means that the older daughter is Mekudeshes and not the younger daughter. That's a halacha we learn from Lavan. Second of all, in Parshas Chayesara, Eliezer wants to return with Rivka to Avram and Yitzchak immediately, but Lavan objects, and he says that they should first ask Rivka her opinion on the issue. Rashi, quoting from Medrash Rabba, says that that's the source for the halacha, that you don't marry a woman without her consent first, that she needs to consent on the issue. Again, from Lavan's suggestion. A third halacha, Ksubas Daf Nun Zayin Amar Aleph. The Mishnah tells us the halacha that a woman has 12 months from the time of her engagement to prepare herself for marriage, and the Gemara notes that that's based on Lavan's suggestion that Rivka should wait several days before returning to Yitzchak, and the Gemara assumes that days means a full year. So we learn that halacha from Lavan. Finally, the Yerushalmi in the first parak of Moed Katan learns the idea of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha from Lavan's Sheva Bracha celebration for Yaakov and Leah. With those examples in mind, how do we understand Yaakov's apparent disparaging comment about Lavan? That Chas v'Shalom, I didn't learn anything from him. You should have. There are lots of halachos we learn from Lavan. Maybe not such a bad idea. Don't learn from the bad stuff, but you should be open. Ezu Chacham Alamin Mikal Adam. It seems like such an ironic comment to make. And furthermore, another question. Yaakov's remark is not the only difficult aspect of this episode. If Yaakov's showdown with Esav is the apex of the parsha, then the climax is certainly his altercation with the malach of Esav. And it's immediately clear it's not immediately clear what exactly was gained in that battle with the Malach of Esav. I mean, Yaakov walked away with a limp, a severe enough injury that it affects Hilchus Kashrus for all future generations. Right, we cannot get certain cuts of steak because I saw someone tweeted that thank God the Malach didn't hit Yaakov in the prime rib, right? Because then the Jews would be in trouble. He hit Yaakov in the Gidon Asher. So we don't enjoy certain cuts of steak because of that. So all it did is it hobbled us, it injured us, and it's difficult to understand what are we supposed to get out of that encounter where he was hobbled and where he was injured. So I sort of Meir Shapiro suggests, and then I later found that Rav Elchanan quotes the same from the Chafetz Chaim, that Yaakov's comment was not meant to be arrogant or flaunting. On the contrary, Yaakov was being self-critical. He was lamenting. He was saying, "I didn't learn from Lavan, but you know what? Maybe I should have learned from Lavan." Lavan ran a household that Yaakov lived in for 2 decades. And Lavan was single-minded in how he would pursue his tithes. Lavan never let something get in his way. He never made excuses while working vigorously, schemingly to achieve what he wanted. His goals were terrible. They were ill-perceived. They were steeped in wickedness. They were absolutely terrible. But he was willing to sacrifice everything in the pursuit of those goals, of his material success. So a person can look at someone like that, at a Russia like that, see the passion and the dedication with which they perform evil, and still learn lessons from that behavior. Lessons in passion, lessons in dedication. The instances of Chazal attributing important lessons to Lavan is an example of how to compartmentalize and differentiate between the lessons being learned and the source from whom you are learning those lessons. That yes, he was Lavan, he was terrible, but we still have to learn Mikal Adam. We can learn from anybody. So when Yaakov says, "Im Lavan Garti, for all of those years I didn't follow in his ways," he's bemoaning the fact that I really, Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti, I observed the Taryag Mitzvahs, but look at how I observed the Taryag Mitzvahs. Did I do so with the same passion that Lavan observed his rishos? Did I do so with the same energy, with the same sacrifice that Lavan observed his averos? Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti, yes, I remained loyal to my faith and to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but was I as strong as Lavan was in my energy in doing so? And that may have been the catalyst for why Yaakov finally left Lavan's house. The Torah dedicates significant space in the preceding parsha to the business arrangement that was struck between the two of them. As speckled cattle, right, with the specks, without the specks. There's a lot of psukim about that. Yaakov's directive from Hashem, the very instruction to leave Lavan, are delivered in a dream, and they come along with an observation of those same sheep. Take a look at the ringed, speckled, and striped goats. I see what Lavan has done to you, essentially, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. I heard from one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky, when I was in 10th grade, an unbelievably beautiful idea. He said, why was it time for Yaakov to leave? Yaakov was being told by the Malach through that dream, look at the contrast between the first time you had a dream and before you were in Lavan's house, and what you're dreaming about now. The first time you had a dream, you were dreaming of angels. You were dreaming of Malachi Elokim, Olim V'Yordimbo. That's what was occupying your mind. That's where your thoughts were. After leaving Shem Ve'Ever, your dream in Lavan's house. Look at the stark contrast. All of a sudden, you're dreaming about sheep. You're dreaming about your business arrangement. You're dreaming about what's speckled and unspeckled and what you're going to gain out of it. And that makes an impression. Yaakov is being asked, what happened to your dreams? What happened to your passion? More than before, we sense Yaakov's regret in not learning from Lavan's passion. Lavan is certainly no role model. But if we incorporate a degree of his vigor, of his energy, into our Avodas Hashem, we'd be much better off for it. And maybe that's what Yaakov gains from the skirmish with the Malach of Esav. Before Yaakov could face his brother, he needs a battle, a situation where he's going to be forced to move with passion, with rigor, forced to fight for his life. Before meeting Esav, Yaakov had to learn from Lavan. If it wasn't going to be from Lavan, then it had to be from the Sarosh of Esav. He had to face adversity in a way that he was going to be mobilized to use all of his energy, all of his strength. And the lesson to draw from this is absolutely crucial. Very often, our adversaries are filled with passion. Not necessarily in a physical way, always. Sometimes the adversary is inanimate. It could be sitting right in front of us on a screen, and it seems to have more power than we do. It's certainly true as well for our physical enemies who wish to cause us harm, that there is a hatred that burns so deeply that they can't help themselves but to try to hurt us. And if our passion in our Avodas Hashem were to match that passion and hopefully, ideally, exceed that passion, then we'd be able to say in Lavan Garti, but I did, Lamadati Mima'asav Haraim, proudly, I learned from his Ma'asav Haraim, and I've learned how to be a better Jew because of it, how to be a greater Eved Hashem. So I think that certainly speaks to all of you who wake up. You know, for me, it's easy. It's already 10:15 in the morning. But for you to wake up early in the morning to be able to learn Torah each and every day, even during a tekufa where you can't easily leave your homes, I think that speaks very, very, very nicely toward the sense of passion that you're expressing in Avodas Hashem. You should always be zoche to continue to express that passion and to grow in that passion and in that love and that energy of Avodas Hashem in good health and Be'ezras Hashem under more normal circumstances as well. Everyone should have a great, great Shabbos.
Thank you. Thank you very much.